I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Unsung heroes. Unsung heroes.
Hi, this is Ricky Wilde, and you're listening to Unsung Heroes. Sorry it's been a while since the last release, but it's just been a bit of a weird year with the whole COVID thing. It's kind of thrown me a little bit. I think it's thrown everybody, isn't it? I don't know. But anyway, so obviously coming up to Christmas, I was chatting with Lee. And Lee said, how about we do a podcast of the album Wild Winter Songbook, which we recorded like 7 years ago, I think. But obviously we re-release it every Christmas pretty much, you know, and with different packages. And this year we've got the new white vinyl, which looks, you know, absolutely beautiful. Yeah, so we thought we'd have a chat about it. We've not actually documented talking about each track. So we tracked down Kimmy, bless her. She popped over to the studio, socially distanced, of course. Yeah, so there is me, Lee and Kim, and we were just chatting about the album and the inspiration behind it, where all the ideas came from. It was a lovely chat, and it was lovely to see Lee again. Yeah, so let's get straight into it. So take it away, Lee.
Hello everyone, it's Lee Bennett here on Ricky Wilde's Unsung Heroes. We are back for a festive Christmas special. I have Ricky Wilde and a very special guest in Miss Kim Wilde with us. We are talking all things Christmas. Welcome to you both.
How are you, Lee? And what a, it's going to be a lovely Christmas, hopefully. It's I know it's been a bit of a strange year, but I'm really hoping that everybody's going to be nice and relaxed.
Yeah, I feel like everyone's gearing up to make it a really special one after this. After this year,
I really hope so,
I really hope so too. I'm certainly going to do everything I can to bring some Christmas cheer.
Absolutely,
we yeah. think of you, I think, as the British Queen of all things Christmas when it comes to music.
Oh wow, I've never had a better compliment than that, Lee.
That's what I think of. So, what we're going to talk about today, I think we're going to look at all things Wild when it comes to Christmas. There are lots of historic moments from the Wild career that we can talk about in terms of Christmas time. Of course, we're going to do a bit of a track by track, hopefully, of the now classic, I think we can call it that, as it's 7 years old, the Wild Winter Songbook.
Where did those 7 years go? It feels like yesterday that we recorded at Rack. Yeah.
So let's really talk about how each song was chosen and what they mean, because I think that would be really good to kind of document that, I think, at this point in time, as it is now thought of as a classic. Hopefully, we'll talk about all our favourite Christmas music as well, in terms of what makes a great Christmas song and why some have stood the test of time, others that haven't, and maybe pay a nod to one or two that we probably would rather not ever hear again if we could possibly help it. But in terms of where I think Christmas started with Kim and with you, Ricky, is probably around Comic Relief in 1987. So Comic Relief, doing a Comic Relief single was always a big thing back in the day in terms of it was a real honour and a big thing to happen. And you got to work with Mel Smith. Kim, how did that all happen?
Well, I only got the gig by default because my name was Kim, and the whole joke was it was Mel and Kim. But nonetheless, you know, it was an incredible honour, like you say, to be involved in that situation, working with those people, Richard Curtis and Brian Elton, and you know, just an amazing team of very clever, very focused people.
Was the song chosen already when you got involved, or did you have any input into Rocking Around the Christmas Tree? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, they had already chosen it, and so yeah, I mean, it was an honour to do it. Now we, I think it was Stuart Coleman who produced it. I'm not sure. You have to double check that, but it was produced in a really authentic way. So they had really listened to the original, the Brenda Lee one, and they had really, really sort of mimicked it a lot for it to sound very retro. And I really liked that. They'd done it with a lot of love and a lot of care from a production level.
Yeah.
And it sounded great. The record sounded really good.
And you got to dig out some vintage dresses for the video and the performances.
We made the video, and
Curiosity Killed the Cat
turned up.
Yeah.
That was really cute. I had quite a crush on him. Everyone loved Ben. He was such a cutie woodie. And it was shot in a little terrace house, and it was all a bit cramped. And, you know, as I say, you know, Richard Curtis, who's now a bloody legend, was floating around, you know, pointing me. Weirdly, when I look back at photographs of the day, which are a bit of a blur, I have to say, but an alien turns up at one point. And there's a huge alien that I'm standing next to.
It's a sign.
It was a sign. I feel it was. Working with Mel, of course, a legend, had the energy of 20, 21-year-olds, was just going at 100 mile an hour all the time. Maybe that's why he's no longer here. I mean, you know, that man had so much energy, lust for life.
There's a hilarious bit at the end of the video, I don't know if you remember it, where Griff, his comedy partner, comes on.
Yes.
Because the bit at the beginning of the video is him wishing to meet you as his kind of Christmas dream. And then at the end, Griff closes his eyes and says, "All I want for Christmas is Bananarama," hoping that the three of them turn up, and no, nothing happens. It's just, you know, sorry, mate, and on they move. So.
So that was a great moment in my career. In retrospect, I never thought that the song would like carry on being a hit, though. I just thought that was for that year, you know, and I had no idea that we had just started something that was never going to end.
I remember that was the first year that they did the nose, you know, the clown nose, and obviously they wanted everybody to be wearing clown noses. Like, Kim, do you mind wearing a clown nose? It must have been so odd for you to be, okay. Like, loads of photos taken with clown noses.
Yeah, lots of, I think I was on the front cover of Smash Hits wearing a clown nose. I think it was with Carol Deccan. It was a lovely, an amazing setup, and still going strong.
So you still enjoy singing when you get to perform it now? Still enjoyable?
I love singing it now, because I'm really proud that my name's associated with that song, and it's a joy to sing. It's a really joyful song, and it really suits my voice. I love Rocking Around the Christmas Tree.
Yes, lovely. We're going to skip forward a few years, and I'm not quite sure how this feels as a memory for you at this point, or indeed how much of it you'll even remember based on what we're about to talk about. But there's a now infamous YouTube clip. I have to say, it's Ricky's contribution to it that I especially enjoy at the point when he sort of wobbles backwards against the train wall. So we're talking about a journey home, I believe, from a.
Oh, yes,
I think the words Kim used in an interview once was over-refreshed.
That's the one.
Christmas party.
Yeah.
Tell us how that came to be and what went on that infamous train journey.
Shall I say?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, well, I got a phone call from Kimmy, and she said, look, we've got the Magic FM Christmas party coming up, and they want me to sing a couple of songs. Do you fancy just getting the guitar, and we'll just have a little sing song, do a couple of numbers, and then we'll... And I know they've got some free cocktails there, and I said, well, that's
sold.
That'll ding dang do for me. So we went up by train, and I had my acoustic guitar, and we got there, and it was, the cocktails were like it was ridiculous.
Light cheese were involved.
Light cheese cocktails, very strong.
Oh, but so tasty.
So tasty and so available.
Drinkable.
So available.
Drinkable. So we started on them. So we had a couple, I think, before we did the numbers. So, and then we got up and did a couple of numbers, I think, didn't we?
Yeah, it was great.
And it was really lovely vibe. It was in some nightclub or something.
And lots of people wearing the antlers.
Yeah, lots of antlers, I remember that.
So as we left, I thought, I'll have a pair of them, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Someone had left their antlers when they'd gone to the loo, maybe, or something.
But bear in mind, we after we finished our little set,
yeah,
we were there for a good hour or 2 hours.
Oh, yes. We definitely put in the hours, Rick.
We put in the hours, didn't we? And, there was lots of cocktails consumed by that.
Well, we left. We'd had a really long year and we'd worked really hard and we were really demob, you know. We'd had a lot of gigs, a lot of travelling, a lot of things were going on that year. And we really literally, apart from Rick, of course, let our hair down.
It was also our last moment to have a little sing-song, wasn't it? So it was kind of, we were embracing that the whole Christmas thing very, very much.
So we go from Kim stealing someone's antlers on the way out.
I appropriated some antlers that I saw didn't have a home. And and then we got in a taxi and we got to King's Cross. I remember we somehow managed to eat something in some restaurant. God only knows. I wish we had film of that. There might be some CCTV cameras somewhere that would be finding out. And then we God only knows how we managed to get on the right train, Rick.
Mm, well, that's a miracle in itself.
That was a Christmas miracle. And then they just kept on happening. And then we got on the train and I turned around to Rick with wearing antlers, of course, and I just said, look, it's Christmas, you got a guitar. How often is this going to happen, Rick? We've got a carriage full of people who are just going to be faces planted into their phones. Why don't we just bring some Christmas cheer to all the people here? And Rick said, I remember him looking at me going, are you sure? Even as drunk as he was. Are you sure? And I said, come on, Rick, come on.
It was the way he was trying to maintain his balance that I found very enjoyable when I watched that clip back, because he's very much going forward.
He fell over.
I mean, it's hard enough to stand on a train wearing a guitar whilst playing anyway. I mean, let alone when you're pissed out your head. So there were a couple of moments where I did, there's one hilarious moment where I actually did fall
you
over.
Did, yeah. You do go backwards.
And these poor couple sitting down managed to just hold me and just sort of push me up again.
It was just so British, the way that everybody, the second that you started to address people, everybody's head went straight down into the lap. Like, don't look at me, please don't make eye contact with me.
I know, and it was one of those moments where in my head I could hear everything I was saying, but by the time they got down to my mouth, they weren't coming out very well at all. Really badly.
So you get home and.
Let's rewind a bit because at this point, this very sweet lady at the back of the carriage starts filming, and I'm thinking, even in my over-refreshed, sotted state,
there were a few people filming, I think, weren't there? I think there was a couple of phones sort of going around.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, she was one of them, yeah.
Well, at that point, I just thought, in for a penny, in for a pound, you know, we've dived in, let's just go for it. Let's really sink as fast as we can. And I saw her filming, and then and that's exactly the attitude. We got them at Mandy, Rick's wife picked us up from the station. We poured ourselves into the car, got home, and then all of a sudden it became very obvious that what we'd done had reached the attention of the whole bloody world.
So did you wake up the next day to this news in terms of...
Well, my husband, who's like very, you know, he was going on there, he said, Kim, something's going on YouTube. You really... Kim. And then I'd be upstairs, Kim! And then, like, this was like another 10,000. Kim! Another 80,000. I'm thinking, oh, my God. Oh, my God, what did we do? What did we say? I think we must have done something else than I thought we did. And then I started getting really paranoid. I thought, this is literally...
Well, anything
I have
could have
dug
happened,
my own
really.
Grave here. I mean, I've dug myself out of a career. That one that I have nurtured since I was 20 years old is going to go down the pan in one fails, you know, set of lychee cocktails.
Was Max Clifford still around to ring at that point to kind of say, I think we might have a bit of a PR issue on our hands.
Anyway, we
it was a bit scary.
How did the families react when you're suddenly on Sky News and Mum and Dad are...
The phone was just going bazonkers. Just everyone was phoning saying, what on earth are you doing? You know, what's happened? You know, and no one could believe it. I mean,
no, so I think especially for me, I've never been sort of known as a wild party animal, and then to suddenly be on there with antlers completely sotted was, you know, just a bit of a shock to everyone.
But what a wonderful response,
amazing,
though, wasn't it?
Amazing
people
response.
It's endeared you,
yeah,
rather than putting people off, I think, in terms of the reaction was good honour. That seemed to be the general...
I mean, to get on Sky News as well, it was ridiculous.
Honestly, it was like a bit of one of those... It was a bit like being in Love Actually, you know, where the guy gets up and he's got, nothing on and he's singing the Christmas song and it goes to number one and Christmas is all around and all that stuff. Yeah, it was sort of like that. It felt like we were in a Love Actually scene that got left on the cutting floor or something. And of course, the whole thing... Casey Eames, you know, she got in touch with us and said, I've got this on film and I'm not going to put it out unless you're okay with it, which I thought was so sweet of her to do. And Rick and I had a chat about it and we said, oh, sod it, you know, we've really come this far. You know, it felt like a race that couldn't be, you know, you couldn't hold this horse back.
Did you watch it first before saying
that? No, I just thought in for a penny. I mean, if I had seen it first, I probably would have said no. Because, the talking stuff was just so humiliating. Really humiliating. But out it went. Huge views and worries about how it would be perceived. Worries that were unfounded, as it turned out. Bless all the great people who made us feel like it was just a fun Christmas thing to do. And I will say to my, you know, this is why I have a great fondness for antlers, because I believe the only reason I got away with it is because I was wearing them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That was definitely the antlers.
The
antlers were. So how soon after that experience, obviously there's no opportunity to capitalise in terms of your sudden, you know, newfound fame again as a result of this, in terms of doing something creatively with it. How soon after that did the seed plant around,
it was quite soon, because it was kind of...
January.
Yeah, I think we recorded the album
in
straight
February.
After that, didn't we?
Yeah, January,
during the summer, actually, and we had a plan to have a nice Christmas album come out, because we've never done that before, and it just seemed like a good time because of that happening, and because how such a wonderful response we had, and we thought, well, let's embrace it and let's run with it. So then we just spent the whole of the summer recording Wild Winter Songbook, and it was a lovely...
How do you approach it in terms of the studio vibe? Because I've seen other artists, when talking about making a Christmas record, say they've got to make a studio environment that makes them feel like it's Christmas. Did that matter to you guys?
Yes, it did. I mean, some photographs from the album, you can see we put decorations up. I took a great big picture of Santa Claus, didn't I, Roo?
Yeah.
We had lights and all kinds of little snowmen hanging around the Johnny's drums. And, it was wonderful to get the band really involved and get them in playing Stevie P on the piano and Neil on the guitar, and get Scarlett in doing her beautiful backing vocals, and Johnny A on the drums, and it was just beautiful, wasn't it?
It was a magical time.
What influence did you draw on? Because I seem to remember at the time you kind of hinted to fans that this might be happening, and I think you said to them, you know, tell me about your favourite Christmas music. What motivated you musically in terms of what were you going for? If there was another album that you thought, that's the one we kind of want to pitch at, was there something you were going for? I'll throw in that Tracy Thorn's Christmas album is one that's got a similarly warm but darkness through it.
Well, we wanted it to sound very organic and very earthy. You know, really earthy. And that's what I love about it. It's just got this lovely honesty.
Well, certainly we wanted it live. We wanted our musicians on it. So from that point, very organic and earthy. And I mean, from my point of view, I started writing it quite early in January and just got on the piano. I think I wrote one of the first songs I wrote. And the other one was Burn Gold, which is another song I wrote with my husband. And then in between between that, Ricky and I were, Rick would send me over a beautiful backing track. Like, I remember one night, in the middle of the night, he sent me over New Life, just the music, and I literally had written all the lyrics by the next morning, hadn't I, Rick? And I phoned him up in the morning, I said, oh my God, this music just kept me up all night. There's so many great stories about all the songs that happened.
Let's talk about them.
Well, why don't we go through them?
Should we go through them?
From the top.
Yeah. And how you picked them as well. So we opened the album with Winter Wonderland, which is a duet with Rick Astley on the record.
Oh, that was so much fun recording that as well. Yeah. And I remember recording the vocals with Rick. And there was one particular time I remember him saying, he says, what about the harmonies on here? He says, I'm not very good at harmonies. I said, well, let's give it a go anyway, not expecting it to really work, and it was spot knacker. It was just perfect.
And so
it was a lovely experience. His voice is so beautiful to record, really rich, just a beautiful tone to it.
And obvious song choice in terms of one you always thought this one is in the mix.
I've always loved it, you know, since growing up as a little girl. There are a few songs on the album that I'd always loved, and Winter Wonderland was one of them. There's just something so joyful and hopeful about the song, and innocent, something innocent about it, and and I could just hear Rick singing it, and I knew that I would be taking the harmony and that we would let his voice shine. And I think it's a really lovely way to start the album. It really sets the tone. The album is romantic, but as you said earlier, you know, it goes into much sort of slightly more darker places, because Christmas is like that. It's not all Christmas trees and Christmas lights and Christmas puddings and crackers and jokes, you know. Obviously, as we all know, Christmas can be a really dark time for a lot of people, really difficult.
And also a time for reflection, isn't it?
And a time for reflection.
And appreciating what you have at that.
Yeah. So we wanted to bring all of that to the table. Mm. We didn't want to... So we just... I think it's quite a unique album in that sense, that it goes from hopelessly romantic end to somewhere really very dark in the song Song for Beryl,
which is my favourite.
Painful song, actually. So, yeah, it has a real the roundness of Christmas in all its elements. And Winter Wonderland was a great way to start the album with Rick. Just
great video too, filmed in Winter Wonderland.
Yeah, filmed in Winter Wonderland in London, which is a place I love going. And Rick
I love that
beautiful
video.
Place.
That's one of my favourite videos.
And the video
videos.
Is so cute.
Because we did a video on every song, every track for that, that album. Yeah. So, but that I think that's one of my favourites. Rick is just adorable, isn't
adorable.
He?
Adorable. He is adorable.
He's just utterly adorable.
Oh my goodness me. So I remember when we made the video in Winter Wonderland, I got Rick to go on one of those things that go around really, really fast.
Yeah, like a waltzer or something.
Some kind of a waltzer thing. And we'd been doing some pretty successful filming around Winter Wonderland, having a really nice time and having a lovely time together. Then things turned. Things turned quite quickly. And I got him on this thing, and he said he was a bit nervous about it, but I just said, oh, come on, it'll be fine. We'll be fine. So we get on. As we get off, I think there were a few moments where he was thinking about going home. I think he actually said, I can't do this, Kim. I can't do this. I'm really not feeling any of this now, Kim. And I thought, oh my God, he's actually going to go home. He really is. Oh, did you remember? You weren't there, were you? Oh my God, I really thought I'd lost him. So I had to kind of cajole him and use all my anything wiles to get him to stay, because he got really...
Motion sickness nearly ruined it.
He wasn't happy. He wasn't happy at all.
No, well, I'm not surprised. Yeah, I don't think
he was scared.
Been.
Poor Rick. And I felt so bad what I'd done to him. Anyway, that's
our first nugget for the day, I feel, in terms of unearthing the experiences. So we move on to the tracks 2 and 3 are the first of the original songs, which... for me, as a Wild fan, are the kind of the heart of the album.
Yeah.
So we have Hope, first of all, which I'm kind of making a one-man campaign to be the Christmas anthem for this year, because it resonates lyrically so much in 2020 in terms of everything we've all experienced. So talk about how that one came to be.
Hope was... I'm trying to think when it was. It must have been about... 15, maybe even 20 years ago, when Kim was having a hiatus out of the industry for a while to bring up her lovely children. And so I had a bit of time off about 10 years. And I was working with a guy called Mark Cummings, who's got an incredible voice. And
Electric Penguins.
Electric Penguins. Yeah. And so we done quite a bit of writing, and one of the tracks was Hope, but it wasn't then. It was called, and it was Christmas time or something, I can't remember, but the lyrics were different, and but the chord structure and the chorus and the melody were pretty much the same as how it finished up being, and I've always loved the song, and nothing had happened with it, and I'd played it to Kim, and I said, look, I think this could really work on the album. I think it's got potential, and Kimmy said, well, I love it, but I'd like to have a crack at just maybe changing some of the lyrics here and there, and then she came back with a totally different lyric, which was just transformed it from being a lovely Christmas song to a perfect Christmas song, I think. And I think even now people they're saying, especially at the moment with everything that's been going on with the COVID situation, they're saying that it's a lovely message
of hope.
It is just one of the most perfect songs I think you've done together.
Oh, thank you, Lou.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We've had a beautiful response of it from it, you know, recently. And
they're timeless. I think it's so timeless. I think the way you recorded it, the way that you put it together, Rick, it's not going to age. I don't feel like the record is going to age.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why we wanted to record it all live, because we wanted it to be ageless, and we didn't want it to have all different production stuff going on. We wanted it to just sound very,
very honest,
very warm and honest and down to earth, you know. Yeah. And I think we
kind
of achieved that. But I was just thrilled that the song was going to be used for something, because I always believed in it, and I always had a real affection for that song. And so I was absolutely thrilled that it finished up like it was and being on the album.
So here's a segue for you, if ever there was one. You gave the song a new life, and funnily enough.
Oh,
you're good, Lee. You're so good.
It's not actually the next song in the order, but I thought I'd take that opportunity to introduce that one anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right that New Life and Hope are at the heart of the album, really. And, New Life, Rick sent me Rick sent me the backing track one evening, I think it was, and I literally just stayed up. As soon as I heard it, I knew it was called New Life. We had a situation where Rick's son and his partner were having a baby. She was pregnant, Lissy. And our sister Roxanne was pregnant also, and so there was a lot of feeling about that. And also we were, or had just had, perhaps it was, I can't remember now, yeah, we had had a family gathering in our home where my husband and I live, and literally every single member of the family were there, including our two pregnant ladies, and took a lovely photograph which ends up at the end of the video. So there was something so special about that night, wasn't there, Rick?
Yeah.
In the house. Yeah. Every single member, Rick's children, my children, Roxanne, and she hadn't had her children yet, and the whole thing was so magical.
And the first thing you hear on that, the first noise you hear is the
The sonogram.
Yeah, the sonogram.
Yeah, of
Lissy's, the heartbeat
of Ophelia's heart.
Ophelia's
as it
heartbeat,
turned out. Yeah.
How did it come together in the creation process? Was it another one where you came up with you had the melody, you sent it to Kim, and Kim added the lyrics in?
Yeah, it was pretty much. I mean, we work a lot like that, where I'll be in my studio and I'll come up with kind of melodies or chords. Sometimes I don't even have melodies, I just have like a chord thing, and I'll just say, look, this is an idea, is it worth persevering with? And Kim will say, I'm not really feeling it sometimes. And other times she'll say, I've got a lyric and it sounds great. And it's kind of, that's how it works. Other times I'll put a melody idea that I've got, but sometimes it sticks, other times it doesn't. And but the lovely thing that for me is when Kim comes back with the lyric, it's lovely because Kim will come to the studio then, and then we dissect the lyrics, and then we sort of like talk, well, maybe this could be short, and take the ands out, maybe do this, maybe don't, and it's really collaborative, but it's a lovely process, isn't it? I love the whole lyrical process.
Well, I remember the New Life when I bought the lyrics to Rick, which were mostly unchanged from what I gave him, but there was one line which which was needed changing, and that became the line of when you come outside, you're in for one rock and roll crazy ride.
Yeah.
And that I'd written something else, and Rick said, I think that could be a better line, and we came up with it together, didn't we? And we said, come on, let's just write it how it is, you know.
It's a very us line, and I'm so proud of that song, and even now I get very emotional. Well, not emotional, but I always get goosebumps whenever I play it, you know.
Yeah.
Even when we recorded it the other day,
I love to sing. It's a wonderful song to sing.
Yeah.
And then Scarlett came up with this beautiful sort of playground backing vocals at the end. It sounds like children are in a playground singing nursery rhymes, and she just kind of sort of injected that feeling of youth and of children in a playground. I love that.
Scarlett's vocals on that.
Her backing vocals on it, amazing. The way they soar right at the end when they just go somewhere quite stratospheric. And so she really shone on the album, the whole album.
Mm.
Her vocals just brought this beautiful, like, angelic quality.
Like a light.
And
very much a light.
So much, yeah. Mm. It was really like a spell. She cast a spell on the album with her beautiful backing vocals.
It was a really important ingredient
to
that whole
album,
wasn't it?
Integral.
Yeah. So if I kept to the running order, which I was meant to, one would be the next song we were talking about, which is another beautiful, beautiful song. From the opening bars, you know you're in for something special.
Oh, that's lovely to hear. Thank you, Lee. Well, I wrote that at home on my piano just after Christmas. It's one of the first songs that I wrote for the album, and it's when I really decided that's what I really wanted to do. I wanted to make this album. So I just started playing chords, and I was very inspired, as you mentioned before, from Tracy Thorn's album Tinsel and Lights. And a beautiful song that she wrote on that called Joy, which is one of my all-time favourite Christmas songs. And I just thought, if I can write something as beautiful as that, I'll be very, very happy. So I set the bar extremely high, and I just got my hands on the piano and wrote one. And yeah, and it turned out really as well as I'd hoped it would. The lyrics were very much about Christmas, about, you know, Christmas's past and bringing them all to the present.
That line about one by one out from the box they come.
But I love Christmas decorations, and I keep them all very carefully. I put them away very carefully every year. I have ones that remind me of Christmas markets in Germany, of ones that people have given me, fans have given me, beautiful ones of aliens, and you know, just lovely pieces, are very personal. I think Christmas decorations have a lot of potency and a lot of power, and I really love them. And when I slip off this mortal coil, it will be in my box of Christmas decorations that will be the most coveted thing that I would, you know, be handing down. But that's a bit morbid. But anyway, so yeah, one was a song written about going through life with my husband Hal, really, and it talked about Christmas is going through. I mean, sometimes it's tough at Christmas, you know. Oh, I get quite.
I remember trying to record the vocal on that was an absolute nightmare, because she just kept crying all the time.
Oh my God! Well, life, you know. I mean, it's you know.
It's not always a box of celebrations and Quality Street, is it?
It's not always a box of perfect Christmas decorations. Sometimes it's really tough, so it touched on that, but it didn't kind of wallow in it.
Which takes us nicely to Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. So,
exactly.
And why that one?
Well, again, it's another Christmas classic song I just absolutely love, and it's been done by so many different artists and so many different ways, you know. And it can be it's such a hopeful song, but it comes from a place of you know, again, it can come from a place of a lot of pain, and you kind of, oh God, you set me off again. people do have really difficult times one way or another, And that song really just holds on, you know, it holds on to all the good things that life can be, and it talks about them in such a sweet way. Mm. So it had to be on the album. It was a real challenge, actually, because it has been done so immaculately by so many great, great singers. So in many ways, it was quite daunting taking it on. And it's one of the songs, actually, that Ricky and I actually had to really rework a bit to make it work. Oh, do you remember we had a bit of an issue?
There was a middle section where it changes the time signature and it goes into a totally different kind of vibe, and we would to transition into it and out of it back into the song again was quite took a while to organise and to work out.
I think out of all the songs, that was the one that we had to rein in some ideas that weren't working. We had to elbow some stuff that definitely didn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of the, because it's such a classic, it was one of the ones that needed the most attention. But I think we really nailed it.
Gorgeous rendition.
That was definitely the hardest one to record and to arrange.
It ended up sounding, and this isn't a criticism, it's a compliment, really.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Simplistic,
yeah,
but it sounds interestingly like it wasn't simplistic to make, right. But the end result is one that seems really natural,
yeah,
like it was meant to be that way.
Exactly, I think that's a really important point as well. I think very often something that sounds really effortless it isn't at all, and sometimes I listen to records, I'm sure Ricky does, I'm sure you do, Lee, and you think, oh, that sounds like really straightforward, you know, it couldn't have been much to get that together, and then you know that is a song that took, you know, especially if it's a beautiful one that you love, would have been forever in the making and the care and the attention, and that was one of those songs for the
Nick
album.
Nick Kershaw does that a lot. Nick has got this knack of coming up with incredibly complicated songs, but they just sound so simple.
Yeah.
And he's a master at that.
He's a master at that.
Are you good, both of you, at knowing when to stop, in terms of when to stop tinkering? Because I know Jesse, who that we've spoken to from La Avenue, is constantly going back to the tour track and back and back and back, always thinking there's something else. Are you pretty good at knowing when it's time to
that park album it? In particular, that isn't the case on a lot of albums, but on this album, we knew instantly that it was finished. We knew the moment it was finished, it was finished.
Yeah.
And that was I've got no regrets about it. I don't listen to it now and think, wish I'd done that.
The only one thing I would wish we'd done, which we did live, is on New Life, and the way we ended it with the guitars kind of just like sliding down, and it would have been nice if we'd just gone back into it and just had me going la 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 la. la la la. Yeah, that would have been so nice at the end. So that's the only thing I listen to.
That's the only thing you can find. Well, if that's all you can find.
Although I like the way it finishes on the album as well, because you expect that.
Yeah.
You expect it to go somewhere, and it doesn't. And that's the kind of, that's what I love.
It's got that rawness to it, you're right. So there you go.
So one of the next ones is probably a less obvious choice in terms of when you were looking for covers, and it's two very talented female singer-songwriters, Sarah Bareilles and Ingrid Michaelson. It's their song, Winter Song.
Yeah. Well, Winter Song, actually, as it turned out, was a song that I first heard when I went to a show at my kids' school, and I remember they did a dance routine and I was sat in the audience and Winter Song came on. And it blew me away, and I just went straight home, looked it up. I thought, wow, this is, you know, I just put it on in the file, like one day when I make an album, this winter album, this will be on it.
It's a lovely song.
It's a beautiful song, and I've always been a fan of Imogen Heap as well. There's a song that she had called Hide and Seek, and it just had this vocoder, her singing but with a vocoder, and the whole song was kind of carried by that, and it just sounded so beautiful, and I just thought it would be a beautiful thing to try on that particular track, and it just sounded perfect with Kim
singing.
And
a big fan of Imogen Heap is Ariana Grande, who involved Imogen in her concert that she did after the awful Manchester bombing, and Hide and Seek, I think, is one of the songs that they actually performed back then.
Amazing.
So that's a lovely song to choose. White Winter Hymnal, how did that come to be? Obviously, Dad and Scarlett with some gorgeous harmonies.
Yeah, I first heard that song when watching Glastonbury one year. Can't have been that long ago, you know, before the album had been done, and maybe the summer before. And loving that song and loving
Fleet Foxes.
Loving Fleet Foxes. I keep calling them Fleet Foxes because I was old. Fleet Foxes. And loving their harmonies. And always loved harmonies. You know, we were brought up to love harmonies and, you know, listening to the Beach Boys and Carpenters. And, you know, anyone who embraces harmonies, we would listen to Queen,
did Dad take
ABBA.
Did Dad take some convincing to do a Fleet Foxes song?
Dad took a lot of convincing, I think. I think, you know, he probably would have thought, he knew we were going to make a Christmas album. He probably was thinking Winter Wonderland or something. And I wanted to make sure, I wanted it to do something that wasn't predictable and something that would take him into sort of dangerous waters. And I still think that. I still would love to make an album with Dad like that, like Johnny Cash did, and do really unconventional songs for Marty Wilde to do. And so that's somewhere to go in the future. But certainly we wanted to just rein him in on that one. Quite a dark subject, dark song, wonderful harmonies, beautiful production, got to say, by Ricky Wilde.
Gangland Stabbing, I think that's about.
Is that what it's about?
I think so, yeah.
there's something in the DNA, though, with the four of you singing together that just sounds otherworldly. You couldn't recreate it if you tried with other people being involved. It's just a natural sound that you could never
I think
achieve.
It was nice getting Dad out of his comfort zone.
Yeah.
Actually, that's something Jake says to me, Jake Wood, who does the podcast with us. He always says that when you're out of your comfort zone, that's where the gold is.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so true.
That's what Bowie said as well, and yeah, absolutely true.
Yeah, and it's lovely to see Dad embrace it and actually go for it, you know, and it's great. And when we do sing together, yeah, it is a unique thing that it's you can't learn that. Really, it just happens, you know. We're lucky in that we've
got to be something you've been brought up with, isn't it, to recognise?
Yeah, I think we just know each other so well. We know all how we all sing and our ranges and stuff, and it's, you just slip into harmonies and stuff quite easily. It's not a hard process for us.
And the next one is Burn Gold, which you sing with your husband.
Yeah, Burn Gold started off on the piano. It was one of the first songs for the Wild Winter Songbook project, and it was an idea that I was playing around with just after Christmas in winter time, and I was picking up, I was creating a motif that sounded like snow falling, and then taking it from that into nature. Of course, we're very lucky, we're surrounded by it where we are, beautiful trees and hawthorn hedges and the moon and the birds and the cold nights and sometimes some frost and sometimes some snow. And then Hal heard it, and there was a poem he'd written, and we combined the two together and we made something really rather lovely with his vocals and his poetry and my music. And then the Electric Penguins got hold of it and popped
nice
it up
remix.
A bit. Did a beautiful remix, which we also put on the album. And and then we embraced one of my favourite winter carols, which is Silent Night, and brought that into it as well.
It's a lovely song. My personal favourite is up next, which is Song for Beryl. Pretty dark subject matter. How did that one come
again?
Come
that was a song that I wrote with Mark Cummings. The melody, it was originally had different lyrics. It was written, when Kim was going through having a little bit of time out to bring the kids up, and it was I always believed in the song. I always just thought it was a lovely melody and a lovely song, and so.
But with a very different lyrical content, presumably.
Yeah, totally different.
The Beryl didn't exist in that way.
No. This is written way before I think any of us met Beryl. And so it was, I just had, for some reason, I remembered it came back to me, and I just thought it would sound lovely on the album. So I sent the song over to Kimmy, and obviously she said that the lyrics needed changing, and then she took it away and came back with probably one of the best lyrics on the album. I think it's beautiful.
How did you approach it, Kim?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Beryl was a family friend of many years, and she was quite a complex person in many ways, and she could be a piece of work sometimes as well, especially when she'd had a few wines down her, but we loved her dearly, and she lived in the sheltered accommodation locally, and we got to share life with her. You know, somehow our lives just became... it started off with a gardening project at the sheltered accommodation that I was involved with organising, and then I met her, and then she became a friend, and then before I knew it, I was sort of totally involved in her life. You know, I got involved in a few hospital visits and all kinds of extended issues that were going on around her being more or less on her own and old and living in sheltered accommodation. So, and it was an honour to do that for her, and we were living locally and we had a nice time with her. And then when she passed away, of course it was very sad, and I wanted to honour her and remind everyone that she, you know, Beryl was around. She was a big character in the village, and I like to think that a lot of people in the village will have that album and they will say, oh, that's that song about old Beryl.
Yeah.
You know, she used to prop the bar up a bit, old Beryl. And I helped her on many occasions. I can tell you do that. So.
But it's one of those songs that's got, you know, as I say, sort of shadows and light to it. It's melancholic, obviously, but as you say, it also pays tribute in a positive way. And then when you two begin to harmonise, it brings a whole light to a relatively dark song at the same time, which is almost like the whole message for the album, really, in terms of there's darkness in it. It's, as you've said before, Christmas can be a difficult time for people, but also it's a hopeful time. And that one song manages to nail both emotions, I think.
Yeah. I like to think so. I mean, I did think when I was writing it, it was quite dark and personal and raw. But it just felt like the right way to write it, and when Rick saw the lyrics, he felt the same way, and I agree. I think our vocals just lift it from somewhere very, very sad. It just reminds you her life was joyful too.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't just on her own at Christmas. You know, she had a real lovely time sometimes, but there are lonely moments at Christmas, and a lot of old people get very lonely at Christmas, and it's as well to remember that.
And there's no winter album without snow, so we have a couple of snow themed songs coming up, the first being Let It Snow, which was obviously always going to be in the mix.
Oh, it's a beautiful song, isn't it? It's a classic, and again, Scarlett's vocal on that is just absolutely beautiful.
Oh gosh, yeah, just beautiful. I mean, Scarlett just sprinkled her magic over the whole album, and she doesn't sound any more angelic than she does on Let It Snow. And then Let It Snow became a little bit jazzy too. You know, I kind of channeled my Julie London, a love of Julie London, which is what an amazing artist
Crimea
she
River,
was.
What a song.
And her albums, of which I had many during the 80s, and she was a big influence on me in many ways, actually. But I have never managed really to channel her very much, and so I totally channeled her.
Some big jazz moments, yeah.
All a bit jazzy. Too jazzy for Ricky, of course. He doesn't do jazz.
Too many chords, I can't play.
But your voice has that smokiness to it in the lower register, which lends itself to
I'd like to do a lot more singing
jazz.
Like that.
Yeah, we can see you in a 60s style nightclub.
The
you
dress
know,
and
the
everything.
The smoke, the dress, yeah. Ricky on double bass.
I can see it.
I'll take him there one day. We'll get you there somehow.
I'll try.
And then, of course, the song that seems to be the one that everyone comes back to every year from the album and Radio 2 absolutely love is Hey Mr. Snowman, which is very different for the album.
Yeah, cute video too.
Oh yeah, really cute.
Our dog Jess is in that. Yeah. And our fantastic guitarist Neil Jones is in that.
So that's a Kimmy creation.
Oh, funny,
Hey, Mr.
funny story about the about that video. Is they wanted to use a green screen in the back so that they could superimpose different backgrounds and stuff. And so they recorded the whole thing. And Neil had a jumper with green stuff on it. And so his
he just
interrupted with everything, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So then we had to record the whole thing again. Anyway, that was a long old...
Silly old Neely Poo.
And so, yes, Hey Mr. Snowman is a song that sort of just popped into my head one cold winter's night, and I remember running down to my computer. All the lyrics were there, they just wrote themselves. It was as if someone had just kind of slotted something into my brain, and I literally just went and wrote it all out and sang it to Rick, who looked at me with a look of pity in his face.
I felt sad.
He felt sorry, a bit worried about
me. Finally lost it.
I had finally gone there. And then I sort of also the Andrews Sisters, of whom I'm always a huge fan, and I remember I had a 4-track in my apartment in London at the beginning of the 80s when I started trying to teach myself how to write songs. And one of the songs that I took on was Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, and I analysed all the harmonies, and then I put them all down, and then it was one of the most fun things I ever did. I really enjoyed it.
I remember recording all those harmonies as well, because they're quite intricate, the harmonies on that. And so there's this wonderful thing on the sequencer that I use. It's an app called Logic Pro X, and you can record your vocal in, but then you can copy that vocal and make a harmony from it, so you can tune it up. So what I did is I tuned it up, and I worked out the first harmony, which is the high harmony, and then I did the same thing, copied it down and worked out the second harmony. And then I muted all the other vocals and just listened to the lower one. And then I learned that as a new melody in my head. And Scarlett did the same for the high harmony. And then when we got together to actually sing it properly, then we had kind of like, we've all got three different melodies in our head. So Kim has the lead vocal, obviously. And me and Scarlett have two totally different melodies
Different melodies. It wasn't like they just had to pitch a third. you know, like normal. I mean, this was a whole other place to go.
But it really does make you think how the Andrews Sisters used to work their harmonies out. I mean,
and when you listen to
genius.
Them, they sound so easy.
So
they're just sound like
that,
they're just singing away.
It sounds throwaway almost, Hey Mr. Snowman.
Really.
Like, you know, just there it was.
Yeah. And often that's how it is when you hear something that sounds so easy to do.
Yeah,
it's so easy
much
on
that's
the
gone
ear.
In.
And you just don't know how much has gone into that to make that moment sound so effortless.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the same in all creative spheres, you know. It's like food and painting and everything.
Why do you think that's...
A lot comes with it.
Why is it that one? Do you think that Radio 2 particularly picked that one up? What's it about that song that you think stands out?
I think it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
It's just so... It just encapsulates such
Makes
a wonderful feeling that you feel over Christmas. All the good bits
It's all the good bits of Christmas, and the fun, silly stuff, you know, which is a very, you know, important part of Christmas too.
Mm.
And I think also because it's so retro. And a lot of people said to me, it sounds like a song that was a hit back then that just got found in the archives.
Mm. And it makes you feel like there's snow everywhere, even though there isn't.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going full circle to talk about Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, because obviously it makes an appearance on Wild Winter Songbook, but this time it's with Nick Kershaw.
Yeah, bless Nick.
Well, we've worked with Nick over many years, toured with him in Australia and the UK, become really good friends with him. We're huge fans of him, were huge fans in the 80s, and have become even more so in his new recent work of the last few albums he's done, quite amazing. And his new album, Oxymoron, which is just utterly beautiful, preceded also by a beautiful album called Eight. So his songwriting just gets stronger and more beautiful as years pass, and the things that he writes about too. Anyway, we've always loved him, love his voice, love his talent. Weren't sure that he would love the idea of singing Rockin' Round the Christmas Tree. Just wasn't sure that it would be up his strata, quite frankly. And so Rick sent him the track, and to our utter delight, he came back, and then Rick prized a few wonderful guitar solos out of
him. Yeah, yeah. We asked him to record the guitar solo. It kind of made sense if he was singing it. He should be doing the solo as well. And he came back with two solos, and both of them were absolutely beautiful, and I just didn't know what to do. So I just chopped it in half and used the first half of the first solo and the second half of the second solo. And so that's how it finished up being a masterpiece.
And you recreated that famous train journey as well in the video for this?
We
rented a disused railway carriage fairly locally, somewhere in Essex, I think it was. And we all turned up and made Christmas on that train where Rick and I got drunk and filmed. We recreated the whole thing sober, absolutely sober. And managed to get Nick Kershaw wearing antlers, which was really surprised me, actually, that literally, he almost snatched them off me when I got them out. And we invited Kay Seams, who had videoed us originally in our drunken state and had put it on the internet, and then thereafter, 3 million views or something crazy like that. And so we turned the tables and we got her on the train and we filmed her. And that was lovely. We still keep in contact every Christmas, Kay, and we exchange a little messages, don't we, every year.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she started off something amazing.
She certainly did. We talked about it being a classic record already at 7 years old. I think we can call it that. So there's been a couple of versions of it now. We've had a deluxe version, and this year we have an absolutely stunning vinyl version of it, which I believe you might not yet have had your hands
on,
but I have, and it's lovely.
Seen
I can
it on
tell
Twitter.
You.
Oh, I love that.
It's absolutely gorgeous. It's wintry vinyl.
Oh,
it is
so
absolutely
cool.
Gorgeous.
Nice.
But for the deluxe from a couple of years back, we've added a few tracks. So we started off with the Freiheit classic, Keeping the Dream Alive.
Yeah, always been a beautiful song, and we love that. But we touched upon the harmony stuff that we really rocks our boat. And
and very complex harmonies on that song too, actually.
Really, and it's such a lovely, again, really simple melody, but it's such a beautiful song, and lyrically it was just...
And a lovely video, lovely. Which is a homage to your relationship as brother and sister with some super
old
footage.
Cine camera stuff that Dad took of us as small babies, as toddlers, as slightly older children, moments in our professional life. And it just made a beautiful story of where we've been and where we were going and where we have maybe hopefully yet to go. And that's why Keeping the Dream Alive is so important to us. And we dedicated that video to Mickey Most, who first realised Ricky's huge potential as a writer and producer. And so, the story goes on.
It's the pop don't stop message, isn't it? I definitely see in that one in terms of keeping the dream alive. Then we have a beautiful song, which again feels to me like a bit of a Here Come the Aliens precursor, sistered maybe with Rosetta, which is Isabel's Dream.
Yeah, Isabel's Dream was inspired obviously by the music which Ricky came up with, which is just took you somewhere into a dream, really. And I had recently acquired a book that I'd had as a child, and it was a book that got me through quite a tricky time in our lives. We found ourselves at 7 or 8 years old in a boarding school for a period of time, which was really tough for both of us, as we recall. And that book was really important. It was one of my lifelines at that time, and I remember, I know we've talked, Lee, about music really helping us through difficult times, especially in our childhood, actually. And you know, you can it can really get you through a difficult time. And this book helped me through that difficult time. I'd lost it for many years and went on the internet and had rediscovered it. I found a copy of it on the internet, and lo and behold, it turned up in the post, and it was like someone had come back from the dead. It was just an astonishing thing to open those pages again. And then, of course, the lyrics flooded out as soon as I heard this beautiful music that Rick had composed.
Wow.
Gorgeous. And of course Rosie was on it as well.
And then Rosie's on it, yeah, talking some of the story. And her voice, my daughter's voice, morphs into my voice. So it's a deeply personal song, and but magical too, you know. Yeah. I think it could be in a film, couldn't it? It could be in a sort of film about winter wonderland, snowy kind of film with mountains. And
it's definitely got
the Snow Queen or something.
It's that dreamy quality. Again, thinking about it as you were talking, the other song that I think it shares a DNA with is Dream Sequence from Catch as Catch Can.
That's so true.
There's something in that linking those two songs together for me. We'll move on to a song that's probably been one of the ones done the most, and it must be so hard to approach in terms of putting a wild stamp on it, which is Last Christmas.
Oh, well, we all miss George very terribly, and it's always lovely to have a little homage to George every year when we're
shouted at us actually to do it, and
it's such a classic Christmas song. It's the Christmas song that everyone loves and wants to hear, isn't it?
Actually, it's sort of quite reminiscent of Four Letter Word too, isn't it? It has the same kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And actually, a couple of times we sort of morphed the two songs together. But I think we did that once or twice. But actually, really, this song just stands on its own.
Yeah.
We gave it our three-part harmony vibe. We kept it very simple.
Yeah,
it's really more of an homage to George than anything else.
Faithful, I think, is how I'd put that one.
Yeah.
So we're going to skip on a couple of years. You take Wild Winter Songbook out on the road in a couple of different sort of ways, but along the way on that journey you meet Lawnmower Death.
Yes.
And you were talking about how, you know, Marty, your dad, you wanted to bring him into a song that people wouldn't associate him with. I don't think many people would put Kim Wilde and Lawnmower Death together, but you did, and you came up with an anti-Christmas single, if there's such a thing, called FU Christmas.
Actually, it was the first FU Christmas was the first thing we recorded in Rick's Doghouse Studios when they were built. And I said, what a great way to kind of christen the crib. Christen the crib.
How did that song happen? How did that collaboration happen?
Well, they did a version of Kids in America, and I always get asked, I mean, the question I get asked after What Was It Like Meeting Michael Jackson, I get asked, what cover version of Kids in America do you like the most or least, you know? So I always would say Lawnmower Death, because it has so much, it has all the excitement, the original excitement we had when we recorded it first, and it has all the irreverence, and it has all the rock and roll, of course, but it's completely bonkers too, which I totally relate to somehow, and so does Rick. And anyway, so we loved Lawnmower Death from that moment on. FU Christmas sort of like just developed over the years. You know, we just, you know, Pete just keeps, you know, he's full of crazy ideas. I got to actually go on stage with him at Download and did
a bit terrifying.
I had so much fun doing Download, because we were doing an 80s pop concert only a few miles away. So I had to like jump in the car, go down to Download, join all these nutters on
pogo
stage.
Through it.
And watch out, Grandma. Here comes a little lawnmower. Watch out, Grandma. She's gonna knock your head right off. Woo! So, yeah, I was singing songs like that with Lawnmower Death. And then all of a sudden I was going back and singing Cambodia and View from a Bridge. It was a very bizarre
day. You can hear on some, like, home footage that people have taken on YouTube of people filming the part that you've come on. It's that moment when they've gone, oh, no, it really is her. It's actually her.
When you
hear them realising it's not someone dressed up as you. It's actually really you.
Oh, it was really me. They couldn't believe it. The crowd went absolutely crazy. It was one of my favourite gigs I've ever done in my life. But I made a connection with them via Twitter when I first got onto Twitter with Pete and the band, and we've done Download, of course, we've done a few things. FU Christmas just was, I don't know how that happened actually.
They appeared at your lovely Manchester gig at Christmas.
I don't know,
they
we had so much fun
one.
Recording
oh, we
that
did,
song.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
crazy.
And a video too, that's fun. Do you remember
oh,
the video
fun.
Shoot?
Yeah, we, there's a pub in Hitchin, yeah. Pub in
oh,
Hitchin.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and,
great.
And we just, I think they chucked everybody out about 10 o'clock and we rolled in and set up all the cameras and there till about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh,
and,
so
yeah,
much fun.
Yeah,
that was great.
Great.
And then, yeah, we had a few family members around the table and we had a few friends, my mate, Colin, behind the bar serving the pints
yeah.
and yeah, we had a really
oh,
fun time.
We had
time.
Real fun doing yeah. that. Yeah.
So, in terms of life left in Wild Winter Songbook, I think it's going to be a timeless one. It will keep with the gift that keeps on giving. I think, but I believe you might have something extra special
well,
this year.
But actually, I mean, the song we haven't talked about, which is Deck the Halls,
oh, yeah.
And that is actually one of my most favourite songs on the album. And Deck the Halls started again on the piano and then was very inspired by one of my favourite songwriters, Todd Rundgren, and then I just sort of took it somewhere else to call it Angel Sing. And then we worked with a beautiful choir on it eventually, and I'd finished the song and I brought it into the studio for Rick to hear, and then Rick suggested this key change just as the choir comes in massively, and it lifted the whole song. Do you remember, Rick? And one moment it was really a lovely song, but then it became something else very, I think anyway, it's my favourite song probably I've ever been involved
wow.
in writing.
Yeah, yeah. And the choir on it as well, it sounds so
and
beautiful.
Also the choir parts, it was wonderful writing those as well. That was a really new experience for me to write choir parts, and so yeah, there's something very special about that song,
yeah.
And I ended up singing it on Songs of Praise, which, you know, never thought in a million years I'd end up on a church-led program on TV, but it felt really right, and it gives me hope that maybe choirs will take it on as a song in decades to come.
It's
like a hymn, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a hymn. Yeah,
I think those songs are all of the songs, particularly your original songs on that album, are going to be hymns for us for many years to come. And it's the album, when I think of my own household, it is without question the only album, I can honestly say that, the only album that cuts through the generations in
yeah.
terms of, it's the one that everyone can agree on in terms yes. of, yes, we can all listen to this
oh,
and get
yes,
something
isn't that
from
great?
It.
That's a yeah. great compliment, and that's exactly what we wanted to achieve.
Yeah, and for years to come, I think we'll all be listening to it. It's the one that's going to come out first every year. Kim, you and I have talked before about other Christmas albums, and Sean Colvin's Christmas album is
yes.
one that comes out for us every year, but I think yours is right in there in the
oh,
one
that's such wonderful thing
well
to hear.
We also we had an acoustic tour last year in Germany
yes.
and UK, and it's so lovely to sing and perform,
yeah.
and so that, I think that's something that we really look forward to doing more
again.
Of
yeah.
in the future.
And of course we've just recorded a Christmas concert in
yes,
a
tell us, tell us.
Crews and musicians during this really difficult year that we've had, so there's a few charities that are
yes,
making
Stagehand and Crew Nation.
Yeah, Stagehand
so this
and
is
Crew Nation.
This is the trend for 2020 through no other option but a live stream recorded event, would that be right?
Yeah, it's not dissimilar to the gigs that we did last, the acoustic
yeah.
tour. Same kind of arrangement, a few little changes here and there. And
some old hits.
And how's
well,
that
yeah.
going to be put out there? How are we going to get to...
It's going to be live streamed.
On YouTube. On the 18th of December.
Wow,
yeah.
what a
so
perfect Christmas
start,
present.
We'll start
yeah.
making, yeah, we'll start publicising it soon. I guess
how
we better
exciting.
Get on with it.
Yeah, we should do, yeah, yeah. But it's lovely just to be sitting together and singing again, you know. We haven't
great.
Done that for so long because of, for obvious reasons.
So let's talk about the year that wasn't in terms of 2020.
Oh,
it's
such a shame.
We know you had some grand plans. We had a Greatest Hits album in the making and a Greatest
yeah.
Hits tour.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've all been put back. How have plans changed? What can you tell us about what you think 2021 might look like?
I think the Greatest Hits is coming out. I think the plan is for it to come out in May. I think the Greatest Hits tour is rescheduled for all autumn of next year, all things being well. And
anything about the greatest hits that you can tell us? Any surprises?
There's
anything
a few
new?
New songs that we've added, which we'll be putting on, and one really exciting duet, which I can't say too much about right now, but it's very exciting, and we're very proud of it, and hoping that everyone's going to love it. So, yes, we're very excited about next year. It was a tough year watching it all just on ice, but actually some great things have come around about it because of the time we've had to just breathe in, to look at the project. And so there has been a proper silver lining on the cloud of this year.
And you've kept creating as well. Ricky, you've had a bit of a good year, may I say, in terms of becoming the I've decided to appoint you as the sort of king of synthwave, as it were.
Grandfather.
Okay, if you like, however you wish. So you've had
how about godfather? And then
godfather. We like it.
Yeah, I prefer that. Yeah.
So you've been part of, spoiler alert for anyone that follows my blog, what will be my album of the year, which will be Nina's synthwave album.
Lovely to hear. That's lovely to hear.
Two tracks that involve
you. It deserves
you.
It's a great album.
It does. Yeah. So what a great time for it to happen as well, Rick, in terms of...
No, she's amazing, Nina. She's got a beautiful voice. And she's a lovely kid as well. And I had a wonderful experience with them coming up to to my studios, the Doghouse. And we had a lovely couple of days just writing and, came up with Runaway and...
Gave up on us. And then what followed, which I think has made Nina's year as much as anything else when I chat to her, is the fact that we have... You knocked it out of the park on a remix of The Wire, bringing Kim into the mix.
Yeah. Well, Nina told me she was doing the remix album and asked me if I'd like to remix one of them. So I thought, well, the obvious choice would be one of mine that I've written. But I thought, well, no, I love The Wire. And I said, I'd really love to have a crack at that. And she goes, well, yeah, no, that'd be lovely. So she sent me the files over. And I love the vocals, but I just heard it in a totally different way. So I just basically started from scratch with the backing track and re-recorded everything. And then I phoned up Kimmy and I said, look, I'm doing this thing and I really hear your voice on it. Is it something you'd be up for doing? And she goes, send the track over and I'll tell you. And she had a listen to it. She said, absolutely love it and I'd love to be involved.
But also, I loved Wire when I heard the album.
And such a good track, isn't
it? You know, Rick had phoned me up and said, which songs were you loving? And Wire stood out for me.
It's very different to the rest of the album, I think, the original version of it. It's not as consistent as the rest of it. It's got something very slightly different.
Yeah.
I can see us doing it live at some point, you know.
I would really love to do that. That'd be such fun.
And I know Nina would be thrilled
to do that.
I have to tell you a funny story about the Wire remix, though, just to share with our listeners. So when Ricky sent it to me to have a listen to, he said, the vibe I was going for... Now, what I think he meant to say and type was Evanescence, the female-fronted rock band.
Yes.
But unfortunately, the word that he typed always changed was effervescent. So it always became the effervescent song, and I would always send him a gif of a Aspro Clear in return, because it's what I think of every time I hear the song now as a result of his mistyping when sending the song through to me.
Well, it is effervescent.
It is. Absolutely
it is. It wasn't a typing error. I meant to say
that. You meant to call it that.
I did.
We're going to wrap with, and I don't mean rap in the Eminem sense, but we're going to finish with a very quick and hilarious Christmas quiz, which these two lovely people know absolutely nothing about start.
I like
so if I told you that five Christmas days over your musical career you have been in the UK charts, so on the December the 25th you have been in the charts five times over the course of your career. You're looking really blankly at me, the pair of you already, before we start.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you some clues, and I'm going to tell you the year, and you're going to tell me which track was in the charts on Christmas Day when I tell you the year.
Our tracks.
Your tracks.
Okay.
So you were number 17 in 1981. What song was in the charts on Christmas Day in 1981? You get one crack at it each, and I'll tell you who's right and who's wrong.
Let's go for Cambodia.
I'm going to go for View from a Bridge.
So it's 1 point to Ricky.
Oh,
come on, Kim. So it was Cambodia. We'll let Kim go first on the next one. So in 1986, you were there at number 28 with what song? It was coming down the chart at that point. 86.
86.
I haven't got a clue. Not a clue. I mean, it's too soon for Hanging On, isn't it? And that went.
Yeah.
Quite a long time before. It might have been. Can you keep me hanging on?
Correct!
Oh. Yeah, I was going to say that.
1987, you were number three.
Oh, there you go.
So what were you in the charts with in 1987? Number three. Big hit at Christmas in 1987.
Is that Rocking Around the Christmas
Tree? Was it Rocking Around?
It absolutely is.
Yeah. Crikey.
Two more to go. 1988. So the next year on, you were number 14 with a song that went to peak after Christmas at number six in the January. But you were on the way up in 1988.
No, it wasn't You Came, no.
Never Trust a Stranger.
Nice try. It was Four Letter Word.
Of course.
Oh, that's nice.
And then finally, and I've got no hope of you getting this one if you didn't get the other ones, if I'm perfectly honest. In 1990, you were in the charts, at the tail end of the charts, for the last time at Christmas. 1990. Beautiful ballad, a Kim composition, bit of a guest vocalist on backups.
I Can't Say Goodbye.
Well done!
Oh, very good.
And that concludes our proceedings for
well
today.
Done, Lee.
So
hey, well, thanks so much.
This has been an absolute dream of mine.
It really has. I've so enjoyed talking about this album.
Documenting your classic Wild Winter Songbook album, which lives on. Get yourself a vinyl copy, people, if you possibly can, because it's worth it. The packaging, the artwork, the vinyl itself, everything about it is stunning. And the songs sound amazing when played on vinyl. We'll look forward to your acoustic set, and we will be so ready to rock and roll with you next year. It's going to be so emotional for all of us.
Oh, all of us.
When you are back on that stage and we are all back in the room, uniting again.
It'll be a magical time. And all listeners, I want to wish you a really very Merry Christmas and have a lovely festive holiday, whatever you're doing. And we'll be back next year. And in the meantime, why don't you give this album a little listen if you've not heard it before? I think you might be pleasantly surprised.
I would endorse that and say it's not the Christmas album you think it's going to be.
No.
Whatever you think you know about Kim and Ricky Wilde, suspend that thought and give this album a spin from start to finish, and you're in for some lovely surprises.
Yeah, it's full of surprises.
Oh, bless you,
it's like a real chocolate box of stuff, isn't it?
It's the advent musical advent calendar you all need.
we're very proud of it. And, but thank you, Lee, for coming up today, and I really appreciate it. And
my honour.
Yeah, and to help make it another fantastic episode.
And we'll be back hopefully with more Unsung Heroes, fingers
crossed,
in 2021.
Absolutely. Yeah, I look forward to that too. Well, thank you, Kim, and thank you, Lee.
Real pleasure.
Lots of love, and happy Christmas to everyone.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas, Lee. Happy Christmas, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was lovely, wasn't it? And it's so lovely for Kim and I to look back on those beautiful memories of recording the album. And it's an album we're both very proud of. And it's just lovely to be talking about them and to document how they were recorded and where all the ideas came from. Beautiful, beautiful times. Massive thanks to Kim and Lee. And so I will be speaking to you at the next episode of Unsung Heroes. Have a wonderful Christmas, and I'll speak to you the other side. Lots of love, guys. Bye.
You have been listening to Unsung Heroes with me, Ricky Wilde, Jake Wood and Lee Bennett. Produced and created by myself and Jake Wood for Wildwood Productions. With music and editing, again by myself, Ricky Wilde. Artwork by Scarlet Wilde and hosted by Acast. Just to remind you that there is a link in the notes directing you to a Spotify playlist featuring all the songs we have discussed in this episode. Many thanks for listening.
Unsung Heroes.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.